Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Neil Robaby, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. I hope that Ramadan has been and will continue to be a time filled with blessings for you all. Vortex of Truth is a show where we use fiction as a tool to spark empathy and create questions in the minds of our listeners as to what they themselves would do were they in the situations our characters find themselves in. We also cover stories that should serve as mild warnings or help to explain and allow listeners to understand the struggles that others go through. Last week, we began a four-part Ramadan series, and just to recap last week's show, we ended the sketch with this. He used to love Ramadan more than any other month. Now, he hates it just as much. It reminds him of the way that things used to be, reminds him of everything he doesn't have anymore, and wants back so bad. He'd try anything, but there isn't anything. That was part one, and in that episode we looked at Ramadan through the eyes of a refugee child. And I just like to go back to what I spoke about last week, about the fact that we really do have an incredible amount to be grateful for, about the fact that, you know, not anyone is different from those people as to what separates them, rather than just pure fate. They didn't do anything wrong, and they didn't risk themselves and put themselves in bad situations. Refugees were just living their lives, minding their own business, and then one day everything changed. Today, we continue this four-part series that will continue for the rest of Ramadan. We're exploring the different ways that Ramadan is experienced and celebrated by children in different circumstances. As I said, last week was through the eyes of a child in a refugee camp, and this week we're going a little closer to home and looking at the holy month through the eyes of a child in South Africa. Suffering occurs all over the world, and a lot of it is in our backyard. Poverty is rife in South Africa, and that's no secret. And the question is, how would that affect a child in an environment where money is less than abundant? Especially with Ramadan beginning to fall victim to the plague of over-commercialization at times, what would Ramadan look like through the eyes of a child whose family is struggling to get by, and who can see others, the families who are surging out to this one? Let's take a look. Here we go. It's a week into fasting, and it's not so hard. Some of his classmates flop around in the afternoon and tell their teachers that they're too hungry to concentrate, and he can't tell if they're just trying to get us doing lessons, or if it's really that hard for them to handle a few hours of hunger. He knows that he's different, knows that his uniforms come from the cast-offs the parents of his classmates handed in when they were done with them. His parents had always neatly skirted around the issue, but seeing an ironed-on label with the name of a boy in his class carefully hidden inside the collar of a shirt he'd been handed by his own mother had been too much truth for him to ignore. He'd used to hear them arguing constantly about money, his parents. When he was younger, he thought that it was just part of being a grown-up, worrying about money and doing sums over and over and over again, sometimes hiding away quietly from the windows as the landlord came knocking on the door. He hadn't known any different. Even going hungry, it wasn't anything new. Sometimes there just wasn't money, and he was old enough that his parents wouldn't take from their carefully conserved funds to make the bills if money was tight just because his stomach was growling at his letdown. Things had gotten a lot better since his parents had finally given in and allowed themselves to be put on the five eligible list. But there was still lean time. Ramadan usually wasn't one of them. Everyone wants to be charitable in Ramadan. But this Ramadan, there were more people than there had been previous, and there was less to go around. He wasn't meant to know that. He only did because he'd been eavesdropping when his parents were trying to send out bills after he was meant to have gone to bed. He'd been taught that eavesdropping was wrong, and now he knew without a doubt that it was. He wished that he'd just closed his eyes and slept as he'd been told to. But he hadn't. He'd been too curious and a bit scared. His parents never bothered to keep him out of anything but the most serious conversations. The walls of their home were paper thin, and neither of them had the time to spare to wait for him to conveniently be away or asleep before they sorted out important issues. Listening to his mom's cry, when she almost never cried, had been awful, but he was glad that he knew what was going on, so he wouldn't accidentally make things worse by asking his parents for things they couldn't give him. He'd done it before when he was at school, feeling jealous of the things that his playmates had and badgering his mum and dad, thinking that they were just strict and stingy not realizing that there was no money for stupid toys and nonsense that was important only to him as a child, and even then not for very long. Now, he didn't ask for those things. He asked to go to bed later, or to skip school for a day, and only when they didn't have tips or other important things happening. That stuff didn't cost money, and it was still nice to get. In the last half of school, for all of our gone so far, they hadn't done any normal work. Dad said that the teachers got frustrated of having to try and control the classes and gave it up. But Mum was happy about it. Mum thinks that Madresa is number one. That's why she was so insistent that he switch to this school. Even though he's got to be a charity student who wears the other kids' old uniform. For the past 2 days, his teacher's been quizzing them about things instead of letting them talk because they get too rowdy, and then everyone ends up with detention. He doesn't mind it because she handles chocolates and prizes whenever anyone gets right on them. The questions are easy at first. Why do we read snacks? Let's get the trips and you make the moves. Simple things that they got taught when they were younger. Today, she asks them, how do you get ready for that? But no one gets any chocolate, even though they all say something about making wudu, finding the kibla, and then praying. There isn't anything else to it, but his teacher is insisting that there is. Eventually, when they give up and start complaining, she slaps her duster on the board to make them quiet them, and explains that they're meant to clean themselves up and wear their best clothes. He doesn't get it until she asks them how their parents make them get ready for important guests. Why do they think that is? Then it starts to make sense. He tells them about making a good impression for a last clothes ally, and then starts games for the whole class, making them take turns to decide which clothes they'll wear for class. He's listening to his classmates, laughing as they try to one up one another and talk about their soccer jerseys and their other cool clothes. And then it's his turn. Suddenly, he doesn't feel like laughing anymore. Not one bit. His smart clothes are his school uniform. They're what his mother makes him wear to meet new people. He can't say that, of course not. So he tosses out an eye and tries to keep a smile on his face, even as he sees his teachers look sadly at him, and hurriedly move along to the next person. He's not ashamed of his parents or of himself. He's not. Not having fancy clothes doesn't make him stupid or any less fun. It doesn't mean anything, not really. But it's still not a thing he wants to talk or even think about. He feels small, and his school uniform is itchy and uncomfortable on him in a way that wasn't normal. He can't ask his parents for new clothes. And anyway, his new clothes are never actually new. They're just new to him. Usually, his dad takes him to the lab, straight from school, and he doesn't bother to change out of his uniform. But today he insists, kicking up a fuss until he gets the book. The hems of the jeans he puts on are free, but he wants them anyway. He wants his jeans and a t-shirt, because it doesn't matter if those are a wreck. They are on all the board. He is not the only one who's wearing hems and faded t-shirts that have been in the washing machine thousands of times. They're supposed to be like that, and they're better like that. They wait to know. And then go home. That is working tonight. So he pushes this up and reads his book after they're done and after he's done at home. His bedroom doesn't have enough light for Mum's liking, and she always makes him read in the kitchen, sitting right under the light. Tonight, she's been cooking all the way through, and he listens to her wash dishes while he reads about pirates and cats. When Mum finally comes to take his book away and remind him about that, she's changed into an abaya, and she never wears those at home. So why is she wearing a shirt? Are they going to be going out? He asks it, and his mom tells him no. He tells him the same thing that his teacher had. They're making a good impression of themselves. He expects his mom to make him wear his school uniform, but she doesn't. When they're done, and he sits down to keep reading, he looks at his mom, and the horrible feeling he's had earlier gets worse. The abaya his mom is wearing is one of her nicest things, but it's not new. It's pretty, it's thoughtful, but some speeds are coming out. He forces himself to read his book, but but it's no longer interesting. The stains are fine, and as long as I had no beat. So, what kind of impression did they make to that? It can't be a good one. At night, he barely sleeps. When he wakes up, Dad coming home so late that he at first thinks he's woken up because it's overtime and they need to get ready for the day. But that is still 3 hours away, according to his clock. As long as it's there, he can hear it. Anyway, he takes his pillow and presses it over his ear. He just doesn't want to hear me. He doesn't want to know what's gone wrong now. He just wants to sleep, and he can't because he can't block out the fighting. He hates it when they fight like this in the middle of the night and so loud that he knows it's bad. Because usually they don't shout like that as long as they're out. They know someone contains the landlord. They'd have to be a giant fire. They might get threatened with getting evicted again. It feels like 5 minutes later that his mom was waking him up to the hood and telling him lies. She already started eating before he woke up when he looks like nothing on his bed. He remembers his dad telling his mom the times are tough with that horrible catch in his voice, and he wants to cry like he used to when he was little. We're about to take our break for the episode, and we hope that you'll join us again as soon as the break is over. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. That was our commercial break for today. The first part of the show was our sketch, where we continued our second episode of the four-part series that will continue for all of Ramadan, where we explored the way that Ramadan is experienced by a child in South Africa whose parents are really going through a tough time. As I said earlier, suffering occurs very close to home. Poverty is a huge problem in South Africa, and when it affects people all over the world, when it affects people in a refugee camp like we talked about last time, and when it affects people even now, very, very close to home, we don't really think about that. We don't really think about how debilitating it can be. We just finished our sketch, and we ended off with the following line. He remembers his dad telling his mom the times are tough with that horrible touch in his voice, and he wants to cry like he used to when he was little. That's the end of part two sketch, and as I said, we look through the eyes of a child in South Africa as opposed to the struggles faced by a refugee child like we did the first time, but there are still some very notable similarities, and those are protectiveness towards parents, lying to say their parents and their feelings, maturity beyond the child's age, due to being forced to grow up far faster than they should have. And it's really a precious commodity that very often gets sacrificed in situations not in poverty, but living just below the poverty line. And that's so that these children can survive. And instead of getting those in ignorance bliss, their parents are forced to tell them the truth. That there's just no money, that life isn't a wall of roses and sunshine. They're exposed to fights that crop up when people feel hopeless and desperate, as is the case when there just isn't enough money to cover necessities. More than that, they begin to realize that they cost money and try to find ways to minimize the cost of their families, keeping and feeding. It's truly very, very sad that so many children think of themselves as a burden that they need less than on their parents. And it's not because of anything the parents have done in many occasions. The poverty cycle is one that stretches across generations, and it's very, very difficult to break out of, simply because people who are born without any kind of poverty hanging over their heads have a leg up, a huge, huge leg up. And though we try with outreach programs and we try with affirmative action and all sorts of things, even the playing field, it is true that there's trauma and there are systemic difficulties that need to be fought when you're trying to escape abject poverty. Now, let's talk about the second aspect of the sketch, the shame, jealousy, and pain that comes with comparing and having to accept hand-me-downs from other people. It is incredibly humiliating to be made to feel that you're lesser than another person in any instance. whether that may be, you know, what you're wearing or your intellect or your experience in life. But for the sketch specifically, imagine knowing that people can see something as different about you, for something that's entirely out of your control and that you absolutely cannot fix. Imagine just feeling like it's written on your forehead. Whether or not people can tell when children are dressed in clothing that it's ill-fitting and worn, that it's secondhand, is not the point. The point is that these children know it, and they feel the difference between themselves and the rest of their class or their school very acutely. What's worse, they begin to question whether they themselves are second best, just like the things they receive. In our sketch today, we don't touch that topic too much on the head. We touch very deeply at the beginning, and then it gets clearer as time goes by. Because whether or not we like to think of clothing as something that we pay attention to, it's very true that we value neatness and we value newness if we think about how much we throw away instead of recycling or repairing or trying to reuse. Society has become very indoctrinated into thinking that shiny new things are better simply because they're not aged, there's no evidence of wear or tear on them. And if you think about a child having to look at something that so clearly marks him or her as different to the rest of the pack, it's very sad, and it's also very, very indicative of the fact that we as a society have started to place importance on the wrong things. And that's not to say that, you know, we shouldn't be placing importance on neatness, we shouldn't be placing importance on grooming, but when we, and this does happen, when we look at clothing, and even when you think about branded clothing, when we look at that as a symbol of status, which does happen, that just suggests to me that something has gone quite wrong. So, as we said, today we talked about the fact that money can, and lack of money rather, can lead to some very, very deep problems in one's life, not simply because of greed, because the stress that's caused by having debt collectors come after you, having to count your pennies when you're at the store, at the grocery store, all those kinds of things have a huge and enduring impact on the person and then on the rest of the family that they're trying to raise and feed. Then we also talked about the fact that when we can see the difference between one and another, we are often very discriminatory, and it's something that as a society we need to dismantle, because it's something that even our children are noticing and are putting into practice the way that they see, you know, figures on the TV or people in their community do. Okay, before we wrap up for today, I wanted to speak a little bit about the little lesson that was given by the teacher in today's sketch to dress to impress and praying for that. And is that something that we do when we're standing in front of Allah, the way that we do when we're standing in front of people? It's not, I don't think at least, that we're meant to be using our clothes as a way to measure importance, but it's more to pay attention to all aspects of your grooming, including clothing, or preparing for that. That's not, you know, getting new clothing and going into debt, but rather thinking, how much do I want to impress human beings? And what do I wear when I want to impress human beings? And then what do I wear when I sit down and think for a lot? Perhaps some food for thought. As always, JazakAllah Khair for joining us today, and we hope that you enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you're welcome to get in touch with me, Naima Thrawabi, at theimperfectlistenerblog@gmail.com, or under the handle of theimperfectlistener, or Naima Thrawabi on all forms of social media. We hope that you have a lovely day further. Assalamu alaikum.